sitting here with Easy. What's going on?
Hello.
Well, a lot of things have been going on. You know, I just had the time traveler on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big thing for me.
How'd that go?
Andrew Bashago. Well, you know, he's... It's like, how did it go? How is he coming? Where is he going to? At what time and space? You know, more of that. Mm-hmm. So, very tricky things going on. Also, exactly a week from today, a week in the past from today, I ran into a friend of mine called Jeff McCormick, who'd been on the podcast, you know, and then I had to take it down, and you know.
Wait, was that the guy who was the, like the whole furore with?
Yes, yes.
So finally got to speak to him.
This was the first time I was seeing him face to face.
How did that go?
Not too good, you know.
He wasn't happy.
Not at all.
Really?
No, I think our interaction was like, hey man, how's it going? And then it was like, stay away from me, you pervert. Now, the thing is, I think I can't argue with that judgment too much, because that was kind of like, you know, what I was trying to do maybe is like pervert humor. And so I totally misjudged his sensibilities.
Okay.
So I want to apologize about that. I did not want to do pervert jokes if he was not okay with that. And no. I don't listen to things on Facebook. What I listen to is people telling me things to my face.
Yeah.
So he said, get away from me, you pervert. That's a clear position,
yeah.
You know, that you have to respect the boundaries of. And so that's what I'm going to do.
That is a shame, because before that, it had all been hearsay, innit? So it had been, like, completely unclear. But, I mean, if he's upset, then that's fair enough.
Yeah. But it's almost like, you know, when you see, like, a little puppy, and it's so cute, you know what I mean? And you just see this little face and this tiny little body. It's almost like you want to just squeeze it so much because you love it so much. Mm. And then sometimes you squeeze it to death and it and it stops breathing, you know?
Smothered it with perversion.
But it was just, how much do you love something, really? Mm. And then sometimes you just strangle the ones you're close to, you know? Or some, I don't know. Mm. You know, New Orleans people, I'm having...
Want some M&M's?
I would. Oh, and I have something for you as well.
Oh, sweet.
Here you go.
It's a show and tell. Oh, thank you. Extra pale. Delicious.
Yes, yes.
Hope it doesn't mess up the sound on the
thing. No. So I'm very sorry this happened. This is my official statement now.
Mm. This is the first the world is hearing of this.
You know, and you're like from England, right? And so you're qualified to be my lawyer. You're my PR person.
Yeah. No, I would like to go on the record and say that Eric is a lovely, wonderful person, a dear, dear friend of mine, who made an accidental boo-boo with his very forward sense of humor.
Right.
Which is a complete accident. I know Eric, he would never do anything to actually deliberately upset anyone or cause any drama.
Have you seen me kind of like, you know, among our circles of friends, kind of like mix up or like step on any toes or anything or say something too weird?
No, because you make the forward jokes, but like we have a friend group who's very into that kind of thing, so it fits quite well.
Right.
No. I kind of consider it the New York sense of humor, where I imagine the New York, you're New Jersey though, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I went to school in New York and I lived there for 4 years.
Yeah, but I imagine that to be the sense of humor. You very much struck me when I met you. You very much struck me as what I expected someone from New York to be like.
Really?
No.
What's the stereotype?
I don't know.
Just more forward than the...
No, very big and brash and bold.
Right.
Mm. Like, your humor is very different to the humor I'm used to in England.
Well, I was quite, you know, just the British sense of your wordplay. You have a love of language. You have a, you know, so just those general things I appreciate, you know?
Wonderful. We can both be stereotyped together.
Yes. Cheers. Cheerio, kind sir. Look, you have a scarf and you started, look at this. I've started doing a little, I mean, it's sensible because it has been cold, but I've started to, don't consider this swagger jacket, please. But I am wearing a scarf these days.
I stole scarves from the ladies. Like, all these ladies have beautiful, what do you call them? Those really nice big flowy scarves. They have those and I got jealous, so I got myself a scarf.
Mm.
So we stole them from the ladies. bringing it back. Metrosexuality for the win.
Yeah, so you like wearing different kind of accessories. You love accessorizing. Mm. And, you know, it brings joy to my day. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, you know, we'll schedule something, you'll be 15 minutes late. But when you get there, you look like a glorious golden pony, so I can't even be angry.
Thank you. It's lovely. No, I was pleased you asked me to do the podcast, because it comes at a very good time. I have a good story for you.
Yes.
I OD'd last week.
What?
Well, allegedly.
Allegedly?
Yeah. I was picked up in the dorms by the police in the hospital for what one might think of as DMT-induced symptoms. Mm. Well, let's say they looked similar to DMT-induced symptoms. Let's say that. They looked like someone might have taken way too much DMT.
Well, that's just what the paperwork said, and I don't want to start a rumor because, you know, that might not have all been vetted. But let's continue on this hypothetical.
Yeah. So I'm found running in circles in the lobby of the dorm, just round and round.
Right.
And some idiot calls the police, because when someone looks like they're tripping, what you don't want to do is then call the police, because what's an unpleasant trip will then turn into a bad trip. When there's a cop there grabbing your arms, going, hey, calm down, then someone calls fucking ambulance and people, like, tie you into a chair. Because then you're just tripping, going, like, why the fuck am I being tied down? What is going on here? You know?
Right, right.
What the fuck? Why am I not God? For some reason, I kept asking that.
So, out loud?
Yeah. Why am I not? Because my friend David earlier told me that I'm not God, and I got the idea in my head of, like, why aren't I God? I want to be God. So... But eventually I'm like, why am I being tied down? Why am I in an ambulance? And then I'm driving through this ambulance, thinking that the ambulance is floating through the air above the university. It wasn't. It was taking me to the hospital. Spoiler. So I end up at the hospital.
Did you have any spirit nymphs going, you're actually going to Cedar Sinai, you piece of shit. Open your fucking eyes.
No, there was this one little voice that was saying, hey, you can leave your body, you know. Just let go and come out your body. I was like, hey, I don't want to do that. That sounds like dying. I thought I was going to be dying.
Right.
Reborn as a baby. So there I am in this hospital. Next thing I know, they've got me tied down. They strap me into a bed. There's a whole bunch of nurses there. And then they stick a thing up my penis.
Wow.
No,
that was
warning.
Their opener move?
That was their opener. After putting me in the bed, it was like, in goes the penis thingy.
Right.
Now I find out later that apparently they do that to stop you from peeing all over them, which is, like, I wouldn't have been surprised if I had peed all over them. And then also, they do it to, like, kind of calm down the people who are, like, you know, I was convinced that I was the Hulk and, like, my restraints would just become immaterial, my arms would move. So obviously, I was erratic. And I've been told that they sometimes use it as a kind of, like, a, you know, naughty boy, stop that thingy in the penis, which was painful.
And it got your attention.
It didn't, actually. It was hugely painful, but I was in a state of mind where pain didn't, like, you notice something's really painful, but in the same way that you notice you have a fly on your arm.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh my God, that hurts a lot. But, like, more importantly, let's deal with why I'm not God, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So they stick a thing in my penis, and so there I am, like, going,
good move, powerful people, powerful wizards in white robes.
Yeah, I was like, why is that thing in my penis?
You can continue to shine your light machine at my face and strap my arms down, but I am God, I will escape.
Yeah, I thought I would. You know,
and I will explode all your hearts with my mind powers.
I know, I thought I could convince them to let the restraints off me with my mind.
Okay.
So in between thinking they were going to let the restraints off me, wondering why there was a thing in my penis, and then thinking one of the doctors was going to give me a blowjob. He didn't, but I thought he was going to, and I was like, why is he going to give me a blowjob?
Maybe you were just reading his subconscious thoughts. Maybe as the willy tube was going in, he was like getting all excited.
Perhaps.
He is a doctor, but he's also a man. And if he sees your body sprewing apart all vulnerable, maybe that's why he got in the doctor business to begin with.
Maybe. I got a little scared there, though. So when it ended that he and I were in the room alone together, no one else there, I got a little nervous, so I farted. Just to make sure that he didn't get any good ideas. And then I felt his aura feel very disgusting. I was like, yeah, that's right, bitch. Stay away from my penis.
Yeah.
So that...
That was a whole, like, mental battle of, like, predator-prey, fear versus run versus flight, you know?
Yeah.
They stuck the thing in your penis that got your attention.
That was that opening gambit. I returned with a fart.
You sound the alarm. You know, that repelled them again. You take two steps forward, they take a step forward. It's a fight.
But they had this continuing thing they kept doing of asking me if I had any mojo. And I didn't know this, but apparently mojo is some dangerous form of synthetic weed. But I didn't know what it was. So I, in my altered state of mind, was taking it as a, like, a kind of existential question. Hey, guys. What's I was taking on? It as a question of, like, you know, do you have any mojo? You know, do you feel confident in life?
Right,
so
right.
Here I am, thinking my penis, strapped down, going, what is mojo? Why do I have mojo? Why do these people keep asking me? Interpreting it in all manner of very unusual ways. And eventually, I come down. They've taken the thing out of my penis at this point. They didn't give me a bedpan, so I end up pissing all over myself. And I go back home.
Did you get any of the doctors with your pee?
I did not. Oh. I waited until they weren't there. I was like shouting. I was like, can someone give me a thing to pee on, please? I'd put on my best, like, sad, like, little Timmy voice. Like, can I have a drink of water, please? Can someone help me pee? Yeah. No, they would not.
Because they knew you were going to squirt them. Because that was the only logical way to go in their little, like,
well,
battle.
I wasn't planning to pee on
alpha.
Them, but there was a part of my mind that was like, you know what? I'm going to break these constraints and run. And they saw that. And so they saw that part of my mind, so they ignored the part of me that was like, I really do need a piss.
Right.
So in that case, the bumbling Britishman thing didn't work.
What if the doctor came in, the one that, like, wanted to give you a blowjob that you were paranoid about to suck your dick? What if he came in and he was like, I got a place for you to squirt? Just point to his mouth.
He did not do that, thankfully. What he did do is we then had to have, like, a very awkward talk. It seemed like they were waiting for me to say something relatively lucid about drugs so that they would then leave me alone.
Right.
And when they finally did that, when I finally said something, which felt very much like admitting defeat, then they let me out and some doctor came and talked to me about, I don't know, but it was embarrassing because he was the penisy one.
Right,
and
right,
I had
right.
to get a taxi home.
He was the one Googling it, yeah.
No. And then I had to do,
right,
like, just more paperwork and more meetings at the university. And
did you have to meet with a counselor, like a mental
health?
I have
to later. I decided to quit all drugs, go teetotal on
everything.
This is only my second beer in a few weeks. I had one beer before, so I'm trying to learn moderation.
Okay.
Drinking but not getting drunk.
Right.
So I decided to quit everything. And Johnny and I, hey Johnny.
Hey
Johnny. We're going on a mission of working hard and practicing every day and waking up early to be proper musicians and do our homework and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, they say you have to hit rock bottom before you can rise back up. And I think pissing all over yourself in a hospital is fairly rock bottom.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
You think it woke you up a little bit to kind of...
Well, it just made me realize that what I've been trying to do had not been working. There'd been like a goal with my drug-looking activities, let's call them. Alleged drug activities. There'd been a goal with them. Which
you know,
working.
Whatever the paperwork says, that could be, you know, those tests could be disputed.
Yeah. No, they didn't do anything like that. No tests, no paperwork.
Yeah.
So, you know, during my less lucid periods, I had a goal I'd been attempting, and it hadn't worked.
What was that goal?
To say become God.
Mm. Yeah, you flew a little too close to the sun, burnt your wings.
Yeah, precisely. It was a whole, like, I can reach nirvana, like, in an instant. It was like trying to get to God without doing any of the hard work.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Take this chemical, do, like, a little thing, click, boom, bah, magic. Didn't work. So, a new tack has had to be taken. And so, I'm starting to learn the joy and the value of hard work. Because that stuff's all well and good, but you can't be a teenager forever.
Right. So you're going to take to hard work as another spiritual practice. You're going to try to reach nirvana that way.
Yeah, because I used to think that it was possible for everything in life to be easy and fun and comfortable, hence the name, easy, because life is easy. But maybe it can't all be easy. Maybe sometimes you have to actually work out. Maybe you can't enjoy everything you're doing, at least not immediately.
Yeah. You know, a wise man once told me that life is not about making things easier for yourself.
What's it about then?
He didn't say. But he did say, he kind of was nodding towards, like, every time we get a microwave or every time we get this, we also might lose a meal with the family together, might, you know, lose the pleasure of cooking together. So it's like making everything easier is not necessarily... You know,
there's joy in hard work, like Sisyphus pushing rock up the hill. Be no fun if the rock's already at the top of the hill.
That's what I'm doing with dick jokes. I just got a big bowl of dick jokes. That I just keep a ball of unfunny, just mangled cocks, and I'm just rolling it up a fucking hill. And a lot of times, you know, I I trip or something, and just a ball of...
squashed under all the dicks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They just plug all of every orifice as they slunk over me and slap me in the face and stuff.
Oh, well, I'm glad we both have our missions in life.
Well, yeah, I just want to really apologize. I want to take this time to apologize, you know, to the comedy community if I've offended people. Not my intention. And, you know, I did say I was waiting to get it from the source. I got it from the source. And he's angry, you know, and I don't know, you know. So that's not good.
But I'm sure now there's a way to make amends with him.
I just feel as though communication, you know, like, obviously it's fresh, but I just hope that after a while can open the doors for communication and be friends. Because, you know, I think it was just, you know, I'm kind of a freak, you know. But if... you know, let's just not judge each other, you know?
Yeah. This is very much a podcast of confessionals, hasn't it? Both our parts.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Onwards and upwards.
Well,
you guys can't see it. Me and Eric.
So, yeah, you like doing the podcast? It's been fun?
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
So, yeah, we're just introducing this episode with Jackie. You know, I'm also promoting a show. I got a show, Roast Battle.
Yeah,
which is
how's that going? When's
March
the show?
22nd. March 22nd at 8 p.m. is the first show at the La Nuit Theater. It's going to be headlined with a roast battle between Kyle Smith and John Rowe. They're roommates, best friends, comics. And they're going to just put all that aside and ruthlessly go after each other's insecurities in a roast battle.
Oh, it just sounds like exactly up your street, Eric. It just sounds like...
You know, you find your niche and you try to turn it into something positive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is how we fucking do it on the West Coast and shit, on the East Coast and shit. Let's bring this shit to New Orleans. And if we know how to do it right and we all just get, you know, establish boundaries... Let's have a good time, you know?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
All right, any final thoughts before we kick this episode off with Jackie Jenkins Jr.?
Nope.
You're my PR man, my go-to, you know, you're my spirit animal. You're the cannoli, you're my canary in the coal mine, you know? I like having you in a perfect childish state, and then I come to you when I need to get picked up, a lift up, and hopefully you bring some of that energy to working hard, being more productive, you know, every now and then drop a hit of acid, but make sure that your rent has been paid that month, all your homework's done, you know.
Yeah, I was doing it the other way around. I was like, you know, let's take some acid and I'll do some homework later.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just like, just front load the homework, maybe make sure the reading's done, and then reward yourself with drugs. So tell that to your guidance counselor.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah,
you gotta trick the dopamine in your brain. It's all about, you know, if you just give the cheese to the mouse right at the beginning of the maze.
Right, he'll never do the fucking maze.
You know?
Fucking, of course.
And if you give the mouse enough cheese at the start of the fucking maze, it'll just start fucking it. It'll, like, just live in a gluttonous harem of cheese. It'll be eating it. Wiping it on a stick and nipples.
It's precisely what happened, wasn't it?
You know what I mean? So you just kind of get accustomed to a certain lavish lifestyle.
Gluttonous harem of acid.
Without further ado, episode 109. Jenkins. Without further ado, Highway Diary episode 109 with Jackie Jenkins Jr. at the La Nuit Theater. Motherfuckers.
Why I leave because he has a podcast and he fucking hates everybody. He goes around and interviews people who also hate everybody. And if any of you hate anybody, you can talk to him at the show and he'll put you on there.
Unbelievable. Yeah. This is all lies. All lies.
He doesn't really hate people, man. He's a pretty nice guy. Actually, his hair grows every time he gets a warm feeling inside. So you might just see his beard come down a little bit longer every time he lets his hair grow. Warm round of applause for Eric Hollaback.
Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. We're in the green room of the La Nuit Comedy Theater right now. There's a bit of commotion around. But you run the Friday and Saturday mic here at the La Nuit, sir.
Yeah.
I like your vibe. You know, I was talking with Byron about this yesterday.
We think
that we're both,
what's your jacket?
You know, able to relax. The vibe you put out is so less uptight. These are high stakes situations. It's much more like, relax, we're all here to have fun. And that vibe kind of permeates the whole show. And it makes the comics able to relax a little bit more and open up a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
It's open mic.
So how did you start out like being like more anal retentive about how you put a show together, or how you ran a show, and then after a while it evolved to be a more chill atmosphere? You know what I mean?
I just fucking, it's open mic. You know what I mean? It's not that hard. It's basic. You come to open mic to do what? Work on shit. Right. You need time to work on shit. And you can't really use a restraint at open mic, because at open mic, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you try to force 7 minutes of jokes into 3 minutes or 4 minutes, it's going to throw off the timing. It's going to throw off the vibe with the audience. It's going to throw off your personality. You know what I mean? So it's about half of it's getting on stage is about personality. Getting your personality, getting comfortable on stage. And if you don't have time to do that, or if you don't have the right environment to do that, you ain't gonna never be able to be a good comic. Yeah.
So like the kind of, it starts because there's a bar right next door to La Nuit, and you just kind of do a couple laps around the bar, kind of scrounging people up, going, yo, free comedy show, scrounge people up. And most nights at the La Nuit Theater, if you come to the open mic, there's at least, like, I'd say 10 to start, up to 30 people in the audience. Like, sometimes it's really
so random. I've done a show in here with two people.
Right.
I've done an open mic. It was just me and one other comic. I did a 30-minute set, put him up for 10 minutes so I can go use the bathroom and try to get more people to come up in here.
Right.
Then came back and did another 30-minute set. And then I've done shows with fucking
I have a buddy
10 comics
so
and
Lamb of God.
75 people up in here,
right,
standing
right
up, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's a little bitty ass room, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I say the randomness of it all is kind of part of the show and shit. It helps people get comfortable because there's no, like you said, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
You eliminate the pressure, you know what I mean? If you can eliminate the pressure, then you can do something. Then you can actually be an artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that permeates the whole show, and I think you know, just the style of how the show's put together kind of made me relax, and it's like maybe the biggest thing I learned from your room is just slowing down. You know, I go so fast where like people, like, you know, sometimes I rushed the setup, and so my punchlines aren't paying off.
Yeah.
But I think I just learned how to like slow down here.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Chill out and do some comedy. You know what I'm saying?
So what's your comedy history? You spent some time in New York City. You spent some time here and there.
Fucking, I've been doing comedy for 10 years in May. You know what I'm saying? I started in D.C. I was going to Howard and shit. It was pretty cool. I liked it. But I went up there to grow as an entertainer. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I went up there. You know what I mean? I was going to major in business and minor in performing arts. But they didn't have a performing arts major, so I just ended up going to school 3 years for business. I got tired of that shit because I really wanted to entertain. I just didn't know my niche. And so I just decided to try comedy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what happens, you know what I'm saying? People always fucking laughing.
Yeah.
Hard times was coming around. I said, fuck it, I'm going to go to open mic and see what happens. So before I did that, I went to DC Improv because I'm about education. You always got to learn. You at least, you know what I mean? You got to learn something before you do something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just want to do something. I mean, it's good to try to just do something, but if you want a better shot at it, learn about it first, then do it. You know what I'm saying? So I did DC Improv. I did an improv class there because I wanted to get on stage. Did the improv class there. I think I did two of them there. Ended up being able to open up for John Witherspoon. Like, by the end of the summer or some shit, he was coming in the summer. I think I left in, like, July.
Mm-hmm.
I did a class in, like, May 2005. Liked it. I fucking did another open mic, a couple open mics in D.C., and then I came home. I decided to fucking sell my Expedition, get a Honda, drive to fucking California, you know what I mean? Use the extra money to pay for rent, got in the Honda, started driving. 121 degree weather in Arizona blew my fucking transmission and shit. I had to fucking hike to San Diego. Good thing I had my best friend with me. He had his car and shit. So we made it to San Diego, get my car towed there, try to fix it. It wasn't working out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All my shit in there. I'm talking everything from college, from my life, basically, because I was living in D.C., was in my trunk, in my car and shit. Then we get up there. We're driving around his car. I try to get my car fixed. We make our way to L.A. He has to go on vacation, basically. We driving a fucking Regal with rims and a pulled out trunk pop on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
It's not the car to have on Sunset Boulevard, you know what I'm saying? This ain't men's society and shit, you know what I mean? It's Sunset Boulevard. Nobody even have rims on Sunset Boulevard, you know what I mean?
So stuff got jacked?
No. We got pulled over by the police. Yeah, and let's say he got jacked. He had to disappear. And I'm stuck in the car.
Warrants or something?
I don't even know how to get back to where I'm going. You know, let's just say he disappeared. You know what I'm saying? He disappeared with the police. And I asked the police, man, you know what? Which way back to Los Angeles? Because I was standing in Englewood with my aunt.
Right.
He tells me go straight that way. And hope you don't get shot. And I believed him because it was fucking California. 14? So I just drove straight. I got to fucking Manchester because I was chilling on Manchester and Figueroa.
Mm-hmm.
Got there, got home that night safe, you know what I mean? And basically from there, I started using this car for a little while, but sooner or later, he had a little, it's a Regal, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He had to put all them shit in before you started. So it broke down sooner or later, you know what I mean? And I had to park it. I had to catch the bus from Englewood, basically Manchester and Figueroa, to Sunset every day to try to do jokes.
The comedy store?
Comedy store, Laugh Factory, everywhere, you know what I mean? But I wasn't really getting too much love when I first got up there. But when I got up there and did the open mics, I performed, you know, Laugh Factory, make you wait a couple of weeks. But like a couple of weeks basically after that, while I'm up there, Hurricane Katrina hits, you know what I mean? My dad was sending me a transmission for my car. Train stuck here, you know what I mean? So now I'm not only don't have a car, but I can't even come home and shit. I don't have the rest of my shit, so I'm up there. But gotta make do with what you got.
So he sent you a transmission in the mail?
No. On the train. The train, you know what I mean? The train. And basically, I'm from New Orleans, so I just made it happen. I had my New Orleans ID and went to Red Cross like the next morning after Hurricane Katrina. Basically, slept on the steps so I can be like one of the first people in line and shit. There was already like 10 people out there when I got out there, like 4 in the morning, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Woke up that morning when they came, got a little Red Cross card. They gave you food stamps, they gave you cash. So I had some money to eat. They gave you somewhere to stay for a couple of months. And I just hit it up. I just started hitting the clubs up with my ID now. And I'm like, yo, I'm from Louisiana. Everybody was giving Hurricane Katrina stage favors, you know what I mean? So I got on stage with everybody, yo. I got on stage at Laugh Factory, like 4 times in a month. You know what I mean? Yeah. I went from having to wait 2 weeks to do an open mic to getting on stage at the Laugh Factory 4 times in like 1 month. Because
you had a Louisiana ID. Because
I had my Louisiana ID. California. I hit the black show on Saturday.
So you
then I
pretended
hit another
like
show on
you were
Tuesday.
A refugee of Katrina?
I didn't pretend. I mean, I was there.
Even though you were there a month
I was
before.
There. Basically, I was there. I was just one of you calling people with their PSP or something like that.
Right.
What do you call it? Whatever it is. I had that shit. I was there early. I was there early.
Katrina people.
I was there early. You know what I mean? I just happened to be there early. But it is what it is.
Good timing.
And I couldn't do shit, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
What am I supposed to do? Come home? I couldn't come home.
All right, so how long were you in Los Angeles?
About 3-4 months, maybe. And I just caught, they were giving one-way plane tickets out in L.A. and shit. Like, any state you stayed in, they give you one-way plane tickets. So I basically took that one-way plane ticket and went to New York and did the same thing until, you know what I mean, I could not do it no more, you know what I mean? I stayed up in Brooklyn off of McDonald and Church. And I would catch the train from Brooklyn to like I own the Laugh Factory because I met the owner, Jamie, guy, the old Asian whatever dude, and he put me on in New York because he remembered me.
Right,
this is back when Laugh Factory was open and shit back in like 2006, like early
Laugh Factory in Times Square.
Yeah, that when it was open back then.
Yeah.
Let me see. I just hit shows, you know what I mean? Just do shows, go where the improv everywhere, you know what I mean? And I mean, after a while, like even in L.A. and New York, like after a while, I didn't even have to use my ID no more. You know what I mean? I made relationships with people. And they would put me up. You know what I mean? Not because I was from Louisiana, but because they saw me up there and I was funny. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it would work out. And I mean, I just hit the scene. And basically, it was kind of the same thing. And I went back to school. I decided in January, like, to just dip out and go back to school. They were giving me free tuition. So I figured I'd do that shit, you know what I mean? Go back to school in D.C. I started open mic at the school by the end of the semester.
So how long were you in New York for a bit? Like, 3 or 4 months?
Like, another 3-4 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to, then I went back to D.C. And I started the improv. I mean, I started the open mic. And it was on the college campus. By the end of the semester, D.C. Improv had their National College Comedy Competition at my open mic and shit. So it was pretty cool, open mic. And basically after that, I was already decided to leave D.C. I didn't really want to stay anymore. Came back home. Before I came home, I stopped in Atlanta to see how it was. My homeboy was staying out in Atlanta.
Right.
It was all right, but I didn't have a car. You know what I mean? You can't live in Atlanta without a car. You can do that on the East Coast.
Right.
You can't do that in Atlanta. So I came here about end of 2006, middle 2006. Hustled up some money, basically. You know what I mean? Worked at Walgreens, like the photo department and shit. Just going to open mics and what. There wasn't really too many open mics here. There was like Lucy's. It was like the only open mic. I would go to Lucy's. I think it was like a Wednesday or something like that. Basically go to Lucy's, go to work, you know what I mean, do my thing and just chill out. Then after about 4 or 5 months, I moved to Atlanta, 2007. Stayed there for like a year and just hit the scenes, you know what I mean, just holler at people. I was getting on shows, performing at Uptown Comedy Club, The Punchline, made some relationships and shit and just perform, you know what I mean, just grinded it out, basically. That's what the grind is about, getting experience. And I was seeing traveling from place to place to place that basically it's all the same. It's different, but it's basically all the same. It's comedy.
Strip malls and fucking, you know what I mean? Chain restaurants.
Find a stage and get on it, you know what I mean? I mean, if you're going to do some comedy, just hope some people are there and make them laugh.
Yeah.
Then I came home, like, late 2008, and I was like, you know, I gotta need a plan. I'm going to have to take a loss because I'm already coming home. I don't have shit. I had to move my parents and shit. That was already a backdrop for me. That kind of depressed me. Made me a little sad and shit because I was fucking...
You had to move your parents?
I had to move back to my parents. I've been on my own all this time. You know what I mean? And now I got to go back home. It's like 2007. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. 2008, like late 2008. And I figured if I'm coming back home, I need a plan. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to have to take a loss. I have to move back home with my parents and shit. It's kind of down me out. And... so I said, fuck it. I'm just do what I gotta do. And instead of staying out, like just grinding it out with comedy, I did the comedy still, but I got a job basically. I got a 9-to-5. And it was kind of against my thing because I wanted to, you know what I mean, just grind it out. This is what I wanted to do. I didn't want to have to, but sometimes you need income, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
But you know
sometimes
I mean?
You fly a little too close to the sun, burn your wings. Mm-hmm. You gotta come back down to 9-to-5.
Anytime, you gotta chill out.
Regroup your hustles.
You know what I mean? Regroup and get them right. You know what I mean? That's what I did. You know what I mean? That was my. That was like the launching point. Like coming home turned out to be the biggest blessing out of everything. You know what I mean? Because I came home and I was thinking, damn, I'm not gonna be out there to go do this, and that. And now, all those. Like that big star or movie scene or anything I wanted to chase out there in New York, LA, it's all here now. Everything's here.
Right.
So if I'm gonna get the opportunity, I'm probably gonna get it here anyway. Right. And the best part is I'm home with my family and shit. But when I moved home, I fucking hated it. You know what I mean? I hated it. I was like, damn, I'm gonna have to get a job. I got a job basically just to get out of the house. You know what I mean? So I wasn't there with my parents and shit after they were home. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you can't live with your parents. I mean, I can't live with my parents. At least I don't know how other people do it. But I can't live with my parents without no job and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I just got a job. I got a job at this temporary staffing agency. They hired me as a supervisor, slash manager over the temporary workers and shit. And my plan was to, like, just save some money and figure out how to get fired so I can get unemployment. You know what I mean?
Right,
and get back on the ground, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I worked there for 2 years. The first year, I figured out how to start a nonprofit, because that's something I want to do. Like, I want to launch a nonprofit. And I started a nonprofit called Not For Sale Music Incorporated. It's a music comprehension program for kids. Never really got off the ground, but you know what I mean? One day, it will, you know what I mean? Something to happen, you know what I mean? I ain't got it to give right now, you know what I mean? But... it'll come, you know what I mean? It'll come, you know what I mean? So sooner or later, But the second year, I just worked on getting fired.
Right, right.
I got a, like, I got my 501c3 and shit.
Right, so you got, you got the paperwork for your nonprofit. Now, what were some of the techniques you employed to try to get fired from your temp job?
I just stopped doing all the extra work. You know what I'm saying? Right, right. Like, sometimes you go over, not overboard, but sometimes you do shit without worrying about it. You know what I mean? Because it's just stuff that got to be done. It ain't a big deal. But some, there's a lot of things at work you don't have to do, you know what I mean? And people don't realize that you don't have to do, you know what right. I'm saying? So I just stopped doing all the extra shit, like giving extra paper clips or whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever. Mm-hmm. I just stopped being a nice guy, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I stopped being a nice guy and stopped playing it safe, even though I wasn't really playing it safe because I was... They would leave and I would smoke weed in the building and shit like that. Like, it would just
I
be,
totally did that.
Like, with the temporary punching. Workers, like, yeah, it would yeah. be crazy, you know what I mean? I was selling bootlegs and shit. Like,
can I tell you one time on a job interview, the lady goes, "You know, your resume smells of marijuana." And I was like, "I don't think I got this
marijuana
job."
Marijuana scented.
I was like, "You could probably roll it up and smoke it." I don't know why I drove all the way fucking down here to get fucking this lecture. Yo. You know what I mean?
Son, that's funny as hell. I was selling bootlegs. Out of my
bootleg
job.
What?
Like, bootleg CDs, DVDs. Okay. I did a show at McAllister. In Tulane, McAllister Auditorium, or whatever mm-hmm. you call it, in 2008 when I got back. I ran out the stadium, and I basically just...
So you played a comedy show and you got ran out of there?
No. I rented it out.
Oh, you rented it out.
Yeah, okay. I rented it out, and I rented it out. It was like 1,500 people. Only like about 100 people came, but, I mean, nobody knew who the fuck I was anyway. Right, right. I just came back home. I printed some flyers, and I was passing them shits out. And, and like about 100 people came, family, friends, but people came. You know, there was enough people to do a show. I had it recorded and shit like that.
Yeah.
Had a guy who just moved down here or something like that. A young comic opened for me. I forgot who it was, but I basically made a DVD copy and I sold it at work. You know what I mean? To the guys who was buying bootlegs and shit. I'd be like, mm-hmm. "Yo, you get bootlegs. You know what I mean? $5." Or you can get 2 for $5, and I throw in this, bam, you know what I mean? So they'll buy 2 DVDs, and bam, you get my DVD for free, you know,
right,
a little stand-up special.
Right, right.
It was probably, I recorded an hour, it was probably about 25 minutes of good shit, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? The other shit was, it wasn't that the other shit was bad shit, it was just drawn out.
More filler,
you know what I mean?
Stuff.
Sometimes your jokes, you know what I mean, you work, yeah, yeah. You put too much into your jokes,
yeah.
Trying to get the point across, and yeah. There's a lot of editing, basically. Like,
right.
Most of the premises and the punchlines work, but the shit in between had to go. Like, a lot yeah. of the, I wasn't too good at improv and ad-libbing on stage, but yeah. I was trying to go by the script. But shit came out pretty cool. I mean, for nothing project, you know what I mean, I paid for out of my pocket, you know what I mean, it's pretty cool. Like I said, I worked that shit. Then the comedy scene in New Orleans was kind of dead. It's open, man. Why are you knocking?
Come on in.
Walk in. The comedy scene. Open the door. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, dude?
What's up, man?
What the fucking people?
Yeah, they gonna be here sooner or later, man.
Hey,
you trying to perform tonight?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to holler at you in a minute. We just recording this thing, right. Yo. We usually start about 11:15, you know what I mean? Just chill out. There's a bar next door and shit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Nice to meet you, man.
Hey, can I go to the bar then?
Yeah, you can go ahead and go to you good. I got you.
Right.
Drunk already and shit.
Stumbling around.
Stumbling.
Why you got a GoPro on your head?
Oh, because I'm trying to do some new shit. I'm trying to start recording shit. I'm going to start producing like a comedy show.
Right.
I'm going to start producing a comedy, like a, not Def Comedy Jam type shit, but like a comedy show for New Orleans and shit. I'm just going to do it out of my pocket. I'm going to record it here and shit. So I'm working my cameras.
And POV your sets.
You know what I'm saying? Something like that, you know what I mean? But I'm going to make it happen and shit. We're going
to
figure it out.
Did that guy talk to you?
Yeah, I talked to him.
He's
you know
bad.
What I'm saying?
Yeah,
and shit?
I'm one of those guys who calls me all the time.
Alright, that's
what's up. These are the phone
calls. He came in and he
Yo.
Was just like, "Yo, can I get stage time?" That kind
Yo.
Of thing.
Yo, how you get on stage?
Just come
who
to
I
the
talk
open mic.
To? How much time I get? Like, it's not an easy thing for me to hang up. On
right.
Them, you know,
right.
Like, I can't get off the phone with them. It's
yeah.
Like, hey, I'm just in the car, and like, I shouldn't have answered this call. yeah, so
always leave a message.
I'm funny, and I want to be famous. How do I get to do that?
Wow, you're unique.
Or then,
you want to be famous? Get the fuck out of here.
Occasionally, I'll say, like, you know, we offer classes. But well, I don't want to take no classes. My friends think I'm funny.
Right,
If nothing else, you should definitely take an English class.
Occasionally, I give them back his number. The people call
They'll call or text me or some shit, not just send to my email or something.
Grammatical skills.
Yeah, every, like, 12th dodo, you just send to Jackie.
Yeah, like, occasionally I'm like, oh, let me hook you up. I got this guy, Jackie. He's great. You'll love him.
Forward you to a website called Prepositional Phrases.
I send them to my email, my voicemail.
Strange,
what was I saying?
All right, bye. What's your head?
My GoPro.
GoPro. He's recording a POV of his set.
I'm gonna start recording shit.
Do you record the audience?
Well, that's what I think I'm gonna do. I'm gonna look at it and see what happens. This is my first time trying it. He's probably like, so.
He's a coal miner of comedy.
Stop! I'm famous.
He's a coal miner of comedy.
That's pretty funny.
I'm thinking I'm going to start recording the shows on Friday and Saturday and making like a little...
How are they going?
Wait, no. Are you going to record like shows and then shit. Upload them so other people can see them?
Yeah, I'm editing
this
shit.
You keep it with your treasure
trove. I'm editing this shit.
They're going good or not?
Will somebody pay me? They going.
No, I was here Friday and Saturday. I love this one.
Going.
He's 3,000 hours.
I love this money.
I got it since 2010.
There was like really good crowds Friday and Saturday.
2010. This camera's been working since 2010.
I'm going to wash these. Uniforms.
Somebody's gonna pay me, and I'm gonna hire an intern to look through all the old footage. And
boy, that's cool. But you can also start uploading new footage.
Wendy, I don't know how to use Dropbox, but my friend Wendy sent me a Dropbox of that think? Right after Katrina shit week video.
Okay, what'd you think?
I'm gonna look at it and like.
Yo, let's talk about roast battle. Roast battle.
Oh, wait. I had a thought I was about to say shit. Okay. I forgot.
I was talking about the GoPro on your head.
That's what we can do on
and there was something else.
We're not using the iPad.
Working at Labor Ready and shit.
Check my.
So, yeah, basically, I just fucking did shit to get fired, basically. They wrote me up three times. They wrote me up three times for doing shit I like. Not helping them, basically. Working with two white ladies, but I usually would do all the work. But I wouldn't fucking do as much. And then, alright, that was up. And what else? Oh. I don't know what to do.
Alright, so you got fired.
I got transferred first. And that's when I knew I was on my way out the door and shit. So when I got transferred, I started just planning what I was going to do when I get out. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Planning when I'm going to apply for unemployment and what I'm going to do next. So I got fired finally from the other job, from the other place that they sent me to.
Mm-hmm.
And I got
on unemployment. What year is this when you're getting fired?
May 2010.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
5 years ago.
That's when I got fired, basically, and that was like my freedom. You know what I mean? I went on a fucking Free At Last tour. I went to Philly. I went to DC. I went to basically everybody I can catch the bus, the China bus.
The Feng Wai shit.
I went to Boston, Philly, DC.
Yeah.
And I went to New York and shit. Hung with my homeboys for a couple weeks and shit. I just fucking chilled out, you know what I mean? And got the feel. My legs was hurting and shit because you walk too much on the East Coast.
Mm.
Came back here and fucking, I was like, man, I can do a lot of shit here. So I fucking hooked up with Yvonne. When I got back in, like, I left in May and I got back in September. Some shit.
What's up, John?
I left in May. Let me finish this shit. What's up, son? You look like you just got off a scooter, son.
No, it's cold outside. I'm
dressed
warm.
All right, that was bad. I hooked up with her in 2010 and hosted this shit in 2010. Mm. And then at that time, it's probably like one other open mic, fucking Carolyn Station or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably something else was going on. Probably Lost Blood. Probably started after Carolyn Station. There wasn't too much going on in the city. It was kind of dead. Most of the comics got. Well, the black comics got tired of going fucking Carolyn Station because they just got tired of being at the end and shit. We would call it like the Rosa Parks section. Like, they wouldn't always put the black comics at the end, but most of the time we would be in the line at the end
Why
of the fucking show.
Why is it that all the black comics like me and only 40% of the white comics like me?
The white comics don't like anybody down here. If it was swiped around, though, it'd probably be the same shit. Like, a lot of black comics don't like each other either. It's a big cesspool of fucking hate. And people are supposed to be fucking trying to make jokes and shit. Nobody wants to see anybody make it around this
place. I know. What's the deal with that?
It's just sad and shit. But I fucking, Tony Frederick Pop has a bar out in the Seven Wall called Bullets. And he started a mic there, and me and B-Dub would help him with that shit. We would just go out and talk to people, basically. That's how we would get people there. We made a couple flyers and shit. We would go to people hung out. We would hang out and shit and just tell people about the mic. Mm-hmm. Get a couple people there. It was pretty cool. Tony got tired of doing it and shit because football season started. Nobody would come out on a Monday night. We fucking like our football and shit. So, I was looking for something else to do other than this shit. But at the same time, this shit was getting kind of whack to me because, you know what I mean? Sometimes people don't appreciate what people trying to do or help them do, you know what I mean? Because they always want to please other people and everybody wants to be a part of something, you know what I mean, at the time. So they wanted to fuck with other people. And I was like, cool, you know what I mean? You obviously don't understand. So I started a show at the Maison. Shit was pretty cool. Did that for like a year and a half. In the meantime, while I'm at the Maison, I started another show. I ended up taking over a show at the 12 Bar in the CBD. And then while I'm working on those two shits, I ended up starting another show at the spot called the Eiffel Society called Crescent City Comedy Classic. And I've basically just been hosting shows and shit since, you know what I mean, since the time, you know what I mean, making shit happen.
Since you're free at last tour, you've been free.
Been free as a motherfucker. I just finished paying off a loan because after the Free at Last tour and shit, I tried to do a documentary. I was going to call it the, This is Summer New Orleans Comedy. It's like a summer documentary. This is Summer New Orleans Comedy. I paid a little editor to come by and everything. You know what I mean? I was going to go to all the open mics and basically just record. I chose like five comedians, but I asked everybody to do it. You know what I mean? Nobody wanted to do it. The original people was, it was me, Nature Boy, Brian Bonhagen, a guy named Bobby Freelo, and Brian Bonhagen. Von Hagen dropped out, you know what I mean? His peers didn't like him doing it, I guess, you know what I mean? So he backed out and shit. And Skip Guidry started doing it. And it was kind of whack. It came out all right. Like, I headlined the show. I probably should have hosted the show instead and put somebody else to headline. But the shit was pretty cool. For the fact that the guy who I hired to do the camera work and shit ended up ditching me.
I'm going to take a picture while you're talking. So I was just keep going.
He ended up ditching me and shit, and I had to learn how to edit the whole thing by myself.
Whoa.
So I learned a lot of shit, you know what I'm saying? I learned how to edit fucking, I learned how to basically put a documentary together.
Right.
I just put the shit together just to do it, you know what I mean? Just to get the experience. And fucking, I copyrighted the shit just so I can have the material in my name and shit. Basically, we here now. She called me back to host here and shit after I came back here in like late 2013 and been hosting here since then.
Yeah, man.
Working on my own shit, like working on movies and shit. There's so many movies. All the shit I was chasing out there is all here.
Yeah, yeah.
I got so many opportunities in here. I got a fucking cameo in The Butler just for going being background. I got a cameo at the end of the movie and shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the main characters hand me some shit. I'm leading a rally. A couple years ago, I did a show with Paul Mooney. I stood in for Akon on this movie with Adrian Brody and Hayden Christensen and shit. And Akon's a fucking superstar. He come late to everything. So I got to like read lines and work and act basically with Hayden Christensen and Adrian Brody and shit like that. Like, I don't even want to act, but I mean, that's some cool shit to do.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Just some cool underground shit. And I kind of like the way shit's been. Like, shit's been low key for me, but shit's been all positive. You know what I mean? I got married last year.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying?
Me and my wife been married since last June. Got a house now, you know what I mean? Dog, you know what I mean? Went to Hawaii for our honeymoon. Going to Belize for our anniversary, you know what I mean? A lot of good shit's happening in my
Jack
life.
Jack is a bad motherfucker,
saying?
You know? I've been noticing, from a distance. You know this guy really has it all figured out. He's got multiple hustles going on. He doesn't work, you know? He's got it all set up.
It's all about the grind,
going
man.
On movies.
Shit's all coming together.
All right, we got to get this show going, but I want to say thank you. You know, you always put me up first here. I appreciate
I try to get you early. You're all right.
Fair treatment. What do you mean?
I would like to keep somebody who can keep the crowd interested so that the next time we can get on stage. I got to get you, like, in the top three or something that way.
I appreciate that. You treat me very nice here. So, you know, why not keep coming back, you know?
You know what I mean?
You treat me all right. So, La Nuit Theater. Check out Roast Battle, everybody. March 22nd.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to come perform on that shit.
2015. Yeah. Jackie's got a spot. It's headlined by a roast battle between John Rowe and Kyle Smith. You know, and the audience is going to demand blood, and that's what we're going to give them.
Like when you're shitting at a new girlfriend's house. You ever shit at a guy's house? You know what I mean.
We don't date guys. So
you're a lesbian?
Yes.
Oh, so you're just 69 while you're shitting on each other's faces. That is so hot. Please record that. I will masturbate to it. Thank you. Thank you. JPEGs.MOVs, anything. Whatever you got. However you got it. I'll take it. The NSA is collecting off our dick pics, you know? Like, every time you can't just send a dick pic. Now the government has it, you know? Or your vag snaps, you know? Your little twat pics or whatever. When you're like, hey, Sarah, wow, check out my beef in this. Just click. And then you, like, watch it on the other end. And it comes to your phone, and you're like, oh. You know, whatever you're doing. I don't know how that's going to work. I'm assuming you guys are just constantly... You guys are constantly sending each other veg snaps, right? And like 6 second, like just a 6 second video of your butthole, just absorbing the sea breeze. And then you guys get it comes to your phone and you're in like a Red Lobster. And you're like, oh, you know, like it's like that. My brain's broken. I really watch too much internet porn, and I can't be responsible for what I'm saying.
So, Kyle smoked the whole blunt, man.
What?
I was trying to smoke the blunt, man.
It's me, a fucking comedy show.
What's going on? So how's it going? It's a little.
It's fucking going. It's open mic in New Orleans for sure.
Yeah.
People to use the Comedy Central. Crowd's been cool though, pretty receptive for the most part and shit.
Yeah, one guy just kind of on his opening thing was, I just divorced my wife and I drove down here from Atlanta and now I'm doing a checking on something from my bucket list.
Yeah, I kind of fucking, a newbie and shit, he kind of fucking killed the flow, but it's all good. Hey, come over here, son, because I fucking. They got this crazy bitch with him and shit, man. Oh my god.
I met him. Y'all don't fuck with me?
Who?
Huh? I have to prove a point, right? Okay, after I prove my fucking point and shit, it's gonna take me about a couple of months.
What are you saying?
Because I'm mean as shit. And y'all probably saw that shit in there. I don't give a fuck. I don't give two fucking fuck. Don't fuck with me.
What's your name?
My name is Lace.
Lace?
Oh, that's Lace.
Like,
oh,
bra, Lace and panties. Shit.
I have to tell you legally, Lace, that I have a podcast called Highway Diary, and there's a recording going on right now.
So I'm just being a bitch.
No, you're not being a bitch at all. We're all hanging out.
We figured we heard you all the way from the corner. We might as well call you over here.
I don't give a fuck. I don't give two fucking shits. I'm ignorant as fuck, and I don't give a damn.
What's going on, Kyle Smith? How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm pretty good, man.
Yeah?
I'm pretty good.
You looking forward to Roast Battle?
You've been
writing some jokes. You and John Rowe are going head to head. You know, is that gonna be crazy?
A little bit.
Are you doing some secret jokes that are like a little more personal than maybe he's gonna expect?
No, he knows everything. I'm gonna tell him.
Yeah.
Billy going up next. You wanna go up to him?
All right.
Then you go up to him.
Yeah, because I need to work out all my shit.
Yeah.
Did Byron go up there? No. Like, I want to talk about that shit.
I'm going to do Byron. I'm going to do Byron after Billy.
Good job.
Then I'll do fucking
I want to hear about it.
Byron's rolling out. Byron
will play this shit. We basically tell each other
everybody was like Byron.
We need to tell each other face to face. There's nothing sugar-coated or hidden.
Right.
If there is shit hidden, I don't know about it.
That's you gonna do a backflip or something like that?
I can.
All you niggas need to be like Byron. Byron just comes.
Yeah, he just like shows Jesus. Up. He doesn't Byron start no doesn't drama.
Byron just performs.
Yeah, I'm saying
you
Instagrams.
Niggas. You niggas not that bad. I don't do Instagram. Back when I was doing Instagram,
niggas can get their picture snapped or something.
Yeah, Instagram gets a nigga in trouble, but I don't give a fuck. I love Instagram.
Before Instagram, nigga, niggas couldn't do their pinch. Oh, when he was doing Instagram, nigga couldn't get his picture snapped or something. I don't know what the fuck nigga said.
What's your shit about?
Like, I don't fucking know. I just decided I was going to talk shit. Because I'm a writer first. I'm an English major.
You didn't do the rotation,
I'm an English major, so I really want to write comedy sketches. But it's fun as fuck to get on, like, you know, Mike. You try to work shit out as is. So I was like, fuck the shit. I'm at Southern. Don't judge me. What happened was...
You passed it.
Yeah. Oh, I went to Southern Baton Rouge. I know. I wish I could have went to UNO. Like, what happened with me was that I have a full-time job, too. I work at the post office. So I'm making real money.
Right.
And I'm going to school. And it's hard as fuck. But at the same time,
this
like,
would happen when we do a podcast with Jackie Jenkins Jr.
So what's your... So were you making more money at the post office?
You fucking right, I'm making... Stripping, I don't strip anymore. That shit was hard. I said, fuck that shit.
Okay.
That shit was hard as shit, especially in New Orleans. Like, the only strippers that make money are the strippers in... don't ever get it fucked up. The strippers in Los Angeles, the strippers in in Vegas, the strippers in Miami, Atlanta, Houston, Dallas, D.C. They are the only strippers that make money.
How much? Swear to God.
Like, all the other strippers, they talk all that cash money shit. They don't make half as much money as those bitches do. Because that's why all the motherfuckers, the stupid ass niggas probably. With money, I'm going to say niggas, which there encompasses go. Everybody, go and spend that fucking money. Like, Diamonds of Atlanta, like, all those strip clubs, like, I know a lot of those bitches personally. Like, it's funny as fuck.
I was talking to the sound dude for like 10 minutes.
I've always been too witty. Like, I'm weird. Even with me going into the post office in the morning, like, I want to write a sketch comedy. Like, my whole thing is I'm in comedy not to actually be on the mic, but eventually be able to write. But it's always great to be able to manhandle a mic. Here.
That way.
This way. Fucking up rotation. Mm-hmm. All right. But it's always great to be able to write. But, like, being on the mic is a little bit different. And it's fun. And it's the experience. So I'm like, fuck this shit. I don't give a fuck if anybody doesn't like me or not. I'm going to get it to the point. I'm going to get it and keep doing it until I'm actually good at it. Might take me a year. Might take me fucking 5 fucking years. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to just do it. Get like Nike, bitch. Just do it. And that's what the fuck I'm going to do. And then I'm a cocky-ass bitch on top of that. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I'm going to fucking run my mouth. And you're going to hear me. Because I like attention. Like any other bitch. I just want to be heard. And seen. It's cold as fuck out here.
Thank you. Burlington clearance.
There you go, nigga. Burlington got the nice jacket. Can't go wrong with
so don't judge me. I just ran my mouth. Not even know who the fuck I am.
I'm not judging nobody. Like, so I you know what I love? I love comedy. I love people who like doing it, and that's all I like.
Yeah, I suck like a motherfucker, and I don't give a fuck that I do. But it's all about progression.
What,
like,
about at comedy right now?
Yeah.
Right.
I haven't seen your shit, so...
Oh,
how much longer you got at SUNO?
I have 12 credit hours. I'm done with all my major classes. All my 300 and 400 level classes, believe it or not, I'm done with. Like, I'm fucked up because I need a French 3.
Yeah.
And I need 3 other electives. I'm fucked up behind electives. And that's the worst position to be fucked up in college. It's like, damn, you telling me, like, I didn't take all these hard-ass fucking classes. I didn't sat here and had to deal with almost all of Shakespeare's shit. I didn't sat here and I didn't have to fucking deal with all of literary theory. And you're telling me I can't graduate because of some fucking elective classes? You gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, what the fuck is going on in my life?
What are you electing? When aren't you electing?
I don't know. Like, I have a video... But I've taken all my philosophy classes. So, like, if I was to take another philosophy class, like, it would be like, and then I'd have to go take it at Delgado or UNO.
Right.
Like, because they don't have a wide curriculum, which is why I'm kind of pissed that I'm there. But at the same time, it's by default.
Make sure that'll go out.
Here. Thanks for reminding a real nigga. Fucking up. Fucking up royally. I saw that face. It's okay. I understand. I'm sorry.
You're okay. What face am I making? I'm just hanging out.
That's an assumption that comes.
How you feeling, Kyle Smith? You're about to go up next, right? You're up next. How you feeling?
Am I? I think I'm at the bottom.
You trying some new shit? What's cracking?
Yeah.
So there's like bullies in this shit too? That shit's fucking crazy.
What are you talking about? I have not encountered one bully ever.
Uh-oh.
I have not encountered one bully ever in
Welcome, you're meeting one right fucking now. You're I'm the Regina George of this shit. I run this shit. I run this shit and I don't know shit and I run shit. I'm a gross ass bitch. And I don't give a fuck.
Enthusiasm growing.
I don't give two fucking shit. I do all kind of reckless ass shit and I don't give a fuck.
That's part of the spirit of being a comedian. Not giving a fuck.
Do y'all know the gross shit I've done throughout my life? Y'all would be like, literally, you did this shit.
You
fucking right.
Explain the psychology behind it. Explain what you were trying to get out of the experience. Explain what happened in graphic detail. And then how you think about it later, and you got a joke. You got a bit.
Got all the same expressions as a female, but at the same time, I'm more business-minded. So I'm a little bit different than your average female, because I'm kind of like...
Business.
There's levels to this shit, man.
You got business.
I got business. And I like my girls BBW. I like them too. And by me saying that, is that fuck. You fucking right to hang out with the big booty bitches. Because when we go to the club and shit, I don't have to pay for my fucking liquor. You fucking right. They got all the bottles and shit. They got all the access to the players and shit. You fucking right. That's my bitches.
You get money away?
Yeah, you pay it. Yo, Jackie, where's my money, man?
Did you get paid?
Jackie, where's my money, man?
We can do it. I need it really, really.
Free money.
Bad. No, that guy's getting divorced. He needs money, right? No, but like, we just did stand up, so we get money, right, Jackie? No, but like, Jackie, I got child support. Jackie, I got a kid. You know what I mean? No, I got a kid, Jackie. You know? So, like, if I could get paid for this set, that'd be cool. You know, you owe me some money for performing tonight.
Apparently, we getting paid and shit.
Bitch, you got me. You faggot motherfucker, son.
You wait for me to turn my back so you can drink my shit, you bum ass bitch.
What just happened, Kyle Smith?
What? He drank my fucking beer.
Who
He's
did?
Waiting for it.
Who did?
John.
And John Rose like, just,
were you
just
watching
stole
him?
Your beer?
She's probably watching him. He was waiting for me to put it down.
I
put
it
down.
I didn't think twice. And then, I was talking and shit. I seen him.
He came out and he grabbed it. He wasn't even going to ask. He didn't ask. He just grabbed it. And I was like, hey, what you doing? And I drank. He's like, man, that's a big ass beer.
I mean,
like,
he walked
swiping.
Over here like.
Swiping, no swiping.
He walked over here like. I wasn't really paying attention to the beer. I think it was
so close. I thought y'all was sharing.
And John Freeman. Shit like that.
The way he grabbed it, it was like his beer.
Right. I thought y'all was sharing it.
No. We don't share mouth to mouth. I mean, shit, you can get a glass or something.
I don't ask.
Fucking let it happen. He did. He get the shit. He walk off like a fucking toddler.
It's so convenient. It's so fucking
convenient. But you're like always thinking about it. Like, Spider-Man.
Like, it's so lucky. Y'all are so lucky. Y'all don't understand.
Why are men lucky to have a penis like
that? Y'all are lucky. Y'all can do all kind of shit we can't fucking do.
What do you mean?
Like, I could be drunk as fuck, and it's like a problem for me to pull down my fucking pants. To be like, bitch, I got a cock fucking squat because I got a piss because I'm fucking drunk as fuck. Like, bitch, guard my fucking crotch. I need two bitches at one time. One right here and one right here. Just so I could pull my fucking pants down and piss in the fucking corner. Like, if I was a nigga, I could just whip my dick out.
Yo, when it was Halloween,
like, I could just hide behind a corner and be like, oh!
When it was Halloween, you know, that was my birthday. I turned like 29 and stuff this past Halloween, and I peed like probably 10 times on like, different people's garages, in an alleyway, behind a bush. It's not, you just kind of stand there and it's like, what's that guy standing there? And then you just pee, and then you just back
like,
off.
Men that get caught by the police pissing in public is stupid as fuck.
Yeah.
Stupid as fuck. If you have a dick and you're caught by the fucking police, you're fucking pissing.
Are you like standing like 6 feet away from the tree you're pissing
talking
on?
Talking about aim, bitch. No, aim, bitch. I wish I did have a dick and I could piss behind a building and it could go in one fucking area because I could hold it, bitch.
Right. You hold it steady.
Shut up. Don't try to bring something else into this shit.
I don't know what I'm bringing
up. It's too much fucking work. It's too much work.
What's wrong with having a pussy? What's wrong with having a pussy?
Oh, it's awesome. I don't have to pay.
I'm not going to hide in that.
Right, so there's some benefits.
It's not happening. No, it's not, clearly. It's clearly not. It's full of feces. You just told me.
They got belts still looped off and shit.
That's not a good place to eat.
It's a secluded place.
I'm sorry, I'm still a black girl.
Secluded and good are not the same thing.
I'm so petty. I'm so petty and vindictive.
You said
eat. But at the end of the day, like, I'm a better than.
You know what I always
say? What I mean?
What I always say about comedy is, like, I have, like, demons in my head, you know, that make me do bad things. But here's what you gotta do. You gotta strap those demons to a sled, and you have to mush them in a certain direction. You have to mush them into a direction that's positive. So if you do stand-up, you can kind of take all your demons, wrap them up, wrangle them to a sled, and then just keep on talking crazy shit on stage all the time. You know what I mean? If that's what relieves your demons, you know?
Right. Because I do a lot of fucked up shit. And it's not on purpose. I don't fuck over people. I just end up in fucked up situations. And my fucked up situations I've ended up in, like, have caused some epic shit. Like, I lived in New York for basically a year. Like, I was up there fucking with a record label. I know what it is to be around industry niggas. Like, it's nothing to me. Like, there's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun is to me. I've done it all. And I tell people, I've done it fucking all. My first job as a 17-year-old was at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in New Orleans. Like, I'm weird as fuck. I know all kind of facts. I'm smart as shit, too. And people sleep on that shit because I play dumb. And I play dumb for a reason. I play dumb because the more people know you can do, the more people think of you. Like, the more they expect you to do. The more they think of you, the more they expect you to do. So fuck that shit. I'm going to play stupid as fuck. Fuck you. I'm going to play dumb as shit. I don't know shit. What the fuck is this? What's going on? Okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to fuck it up so you know I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So it reinforces the fact that I do know what I'm doing. I'm just fucking it up so you don't expect more of me. Basically. That's girl logic to me. Which probably makes no sense to a man. Because I feel so bad for men. Like, I feel so bad for men. Like, y'all go through so much when it comes to dealing with fucking females, which at the end of the day is fucking pussy. Like, bitches are fucking crazy. Bitches are fucking nuts. And they're nuts for no fucking reason. They're nuts for a reason, but it's really no fucking reason because they think emotionally. And men think more like, like, men are more logical than females are. And I know this because I'm a female, but at the end of the day, like, I look at men, probably because I was friend-zoned so much. Like, I was such a dweeb in fucking middle school and high school and shit. So by the time I got to college, like, I got hot. Like, I grew the fuck up. Like, but high school and middle school, you know, I was fucking friend-zoned. I was the bitch that was friend-zoned.
No Monday.
So it's kind of like I have a different perspective of things. Because when, like, men talk to me and shit, I was like, yeah. So are we buying another round of drinks? Like, what the fuck is going on? But, like,
I'm just a dweeb.
Just a nerd. I'm just a nerd and a now hot girl's body when I actually dress up. But like, no, I'm a dweeb. I'm such a weird ass dweeb. I watch anime cartoons. Like, I'm a nerd. I'm a nerd dweeb. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and I think whatever you are, whatever unique thing you got going on, if you put that on stage the right way, you know what I mean? It can be it can, like, validate all your experiences.
I don't care about anybody's opinion at the end of the day. That's so weird. I don't give a shit. I'm doing this shit just so I can get my writing.
I got delusions of grandeur. I got things I got to probably work out from childhood, so that's why I do stand-up.
And you know what? I grew up in a perfect home. Like, mom and dad were fucking married before they had me and all that other cash money shit. Like, you know, people saw. At the end of the day, I didn't do it. Oh, I didn't see it. I had sold drugs. I was a stripper for like 3 days, which was terrible. Yes, I was a stripper for three fucking days. A stripper. And Can I talk about all the shit about fucking comedy? I didn't work at fucking museums. I didn't work at restaurants. I done been a bartender. Like, I've moved to New York from New Orleans. And just like, fuck this shit. I'm out here. I done it all. I done seen it all. I know everything about the industry and shit, too, which is crazy. That's why I tell people, it's like, because at the end of the day, to me, a person is a person. Just like I hate like the whole the tension between the use of the word nigga. I think it's funny nowadays. Maybe back then it would have been funny. But right now it is. Because it turns into a term of endearment. Like awesome shit. Like and like I may not be the only one that feels this way. Like other people may feel some type of other way, but that's just how I fucking feel about this shit. Fuck that shit. Like
I thought it was
come on, YG made a whole fucking song, my nigga. My nigga, my nigga. And everybody on the radio, you hit that shit on the radio. My hitter, my hitter. Yeah, you know what the fuck that nigga saying, my nigga.
What's going on, man? You're talking about the nigga word?
Yeah, I said the fucking nigga word, my nigga, my nigga.
I'm just listening to you. Just being entertained right now, basically. I'm just hanging out.
Are you not entertained?
Just shoot me a little
text. Break it down for you?
Pretty much. I'm getting the whole hustle, bit by bit.
Most likely I'm a ride from a motherfucking nigga. Most likely I'm a die with my finger on his trigger.
2015.
Don't worry about mine. I'm a grind till I get it.
Jackie Jenks is senior. The conversation continues. So what we recorded yesterday was only like maybe 30% with you. I got like a lot of talking with Lace outside, you know, the other night.
Who is Lace, yo?
That crazy,
oh, that's the girl. That's the
scripper.
Crazy girl.
She was a scripper.
That bitch needed some attention.
Yeah.
Her first... But she... The funny thing is, her set is consistent. And that's something a lot of people down here who think they're doing shit don't have, like a consistent set. It may not be a great set. It may be some loud, rambunctious shit. But
what do you mean by consistent?
Like, she has a consistent set of jokes that she's working on. You know what I mean? Right. They might be bad jokes or they might not be working at all. You know what I mean? But she has a consistent... When she gets up there, she's going to say, like, there's four or five things she's going to say, a joke she's going to try, and she's going to go. And it might be a long-ass rant. Might be a 3-minute set or a 10-minute set, but it's fucking the same shit. A lot of people can't even remember that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's kind of the basic shit. She's new, though, so who knows? She ain't gonna be wrong, man.
So is it weird, like, seeing a lot of people, like, you know, this, your mic being their first time doing it and stuff? Is that a responsibility?
It's open mic. You know what I mean? New people gonna come to open mic all the time. That's what they...
You know, like that one guy, he was like, hey, I just divorced my wife last night, and now I'm trying comedy because it's on my bucket list.
It's like a release. I like to call most of the people who still do comedy, even after that first time or just come an event, you know, some people just do it because they got the relief of that shit situation from them. So they just come back to do it, and they label themselves a comedian because they can get a couple friends to come out and see them shit. I like to call those type of people hobbyists. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're fucking just here. They have a hobby. And it ain't their real life, you know what I mean? Something comes along that's not comedy. It's not their dream. They're going to put it aside and that'll be in it. That'll be the end of it. You know what I mean? If somebody came to me to do something else, I want to do comedy.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if I can't do a comedy and do whatever, I'm not probably going to do
it. If they're like, hey, listen, like, I got this business of selling lawnmowers. I'll sell you the whole business of my lawnmower business.
You just got to sit on your ass and... collect money, you know what I mean? Why people selling lawnmowers. No, you know what I mean? But some people will be like, yeah, I'm going to go do that shit. You know what I mean? I tried. And then their life story would be, I tried doing comedy. Oh, I remember that. You know what I mean? They'd be one of those guys with the kids going to college and they're talking to other guys, fiancé's parents. Oh, yeah, I tried some comedy back in the day or some shit like
that. Yeah, I was a comedian.
Yeah, you know? Shit like that.
Because they did it when they divorced their first wife one time.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people getting away with that shit, like, as a, not a real career, but as a, like, they'll run a show and everything, you know what I mean? But they know, in their head, they're never going to get past that, or they don't even want to get past that. They just want that attention, you know what I mean? That gratification and shit, you know what I mean? So I guess, whatever. Hey, the fame is the fame.
So, tell me if you think... this is right. I think, you know, remember when back in the Puritans came to America
And they were very strict society because they only thought that 1,300 people become get it into heaven.
Are you talking to me about history?
Yeah.
Is it in the Bible?
No.
I probably don't remember.
It's like American history. Like Puritans came to America and they set up a very... Well, you
said Puritans, I figured that would go with the Bible because... Okay. But I guess not.
They were just very strict on each other and they burned each other for being witches and stuff. Nope. And they were like...
Oh, I heard of something like that back in elementary school.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I didn't figure it helped me out.
They burned each other for being witches because they're like, look, there's high standards. Only like 34 of us are making it. So we got to be really strict. And I feel like some people think about that with fame. You know, some people as a comic, you know, they're like, there's only 44 spots. And so they like kind of are super strict and they treat each other like shit. And they're just like, they become like really verbally abusive.
There's not enough room for everybody to be famous. It's like an only spot on certain people.
Yeah. It's just that feeling of scarcity is what I'm saying. Some people have this notion of abundance.
Well, this is only 15 minutes, right? They got to be 15 minutes for everybody. I mean, come on. It's not that. They got to have 15 minutes for everybody. I think if everybody actually just took 15 minutes of fame, the world would be a better place. Like, if everybody just took everyone their just turn, there's a line and shit. All right, that was up. I got the camera stuff and shit. It would be great. Like, think about it. You got your 15 minutes. In that 15 minutes, you made whatever amount of money you can make in 15 minutes with your plan or whatever. And then the next person went up and they just had their moment of fame, 15 minutes. And that would be like, then you go back to working and doing normal shit. Or living a life. That would help out. Because then motherfuckers, like, some people got too much fame and they don't even know what to do with it and they go crazy. And some people don't have no fame at all and they just need it or they're going to end up going crazy. So we should trade it off like stock.
Just recognition.
You know what I'm saying? I'll sell some of my fame. I think my wife told me earlier, Kanye West sold some air for like $65,000 or something. Somebody sold some air from a Kanye concert. They put it in like a Ziploc bag and then they sold the shit for like $65,000 on eBay or some shit like that. Oh, not true that is, but that's some funny shit, yo. Oh, man.
Imagine, like, you frame a box of air in glass, which encases Ziploc, which has the air from and you, like, frame it with a photograph from the night and shit.
That's funny as hell. Put a picture on it. Yeah. A picture of what was behind the air, what you could see through the air and shit. Oh, that's funny.
All right, man, let's do this show, I guess. Right. So we'll scramble up some people.
Can't have enough hustles.
Right, let's do this show. Oh, shit.